You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 223. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. And not always, but our go-to guest, Dan Weber, in the house tonight. Dan, how we doing over there?
Pretty good. You know, the fantasy season's coming to an end, or coming down the stretch, and I'm glad to join you guys. Was on earlier with Steve talking about the pitchers we thought were kind of breakout guys earlier on, so excited to talk about next year's draft and kind of the potential guys that are jumping in and guys that are kind of maybe falling out.
Yeah, it is a very fun topic, and down the home stretch of leagues, some people might be looking up at the standings and thinking it's the end of 2026 for me. Hopefully not you listeners, or you, Steve, on the home league, where I've heard Dan has the top dog squad over there. So shout out as well there, Webb. But but in general, we were talking offline about predicting next year's draft is always a fun exercise. This year, I think it's probably the most pod-worthy first round draft you could do, because there is a lot of movement, a lot of action. I love that, Dan, you mentioned that you've done minimal prep, so you're coming in fresh in terms of like the everyman perspective. Steve, I went through the exercise of at least mocking my own list, and then I did one itty bitty cheat to go see what, and it was an article from like a month ago. It's already slightly irrelevant, so it's gonna be a ton of fun. But Steve, gonna be back on. And I think for all the times that Dan has guested in my place, is this the first time the three of us have gotten together on the pod?
Yeah. I think it is. I know we've had a few people on that, you know, when one of us can't make it or what have you. But and we've always left off with, yeah, we should do this with everyone once we get the band back together. And this is the first time that we're doing this. So. Cool to have. I know you guys, I think you guys met at my wedding, potentially,
at the wedding.
Right? Yeah.
That's right.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, for the WAF listeners who don't know, that was the first time Steve and I met in person, was at his wedding, when not only did Wins Above Fantasy, but by name, I was shouted out, I think, in the vows. And wife at the time was like grabbing my leg, like, what is happening right now? All the groomsmen turned and pointed at me. I was like, this is going to be a fun night. And it was. It was great. Dan, I'm pumped, man. I mean, you always do an A-plus job on the show when you fill in. It's like you're a natural. So, yeah. And then, Steve, I mean, talk to me about the topic, because we got a fun little format here. And we got plenty to get through with the exercise and then the recap. But why don't you give the listeners a little overview of how we're tackling this?
Yeah, this is super fun. I think we've done this, around this time. I think maybe the last 2 or 3 years we've done a look ahead to projecting the first round in the middle of the season. I know, like, during the All-Star break, it's a popular thing to do. I think, like, the Fantasy Baseball Today guys did it. So it's a fun topic just when during a slow news cycle, and, you know, as we're getting the itch to look forward to draft season and the off season coming up. So, and I think it's a good assessment to restock where these elite players are, and what you hinted at, Van, in the beginning, like, especially in the back end of the first round, there are a lot of spots up for grabs, more so than usual. Like, usually, like, we sometimes try to, like, oh, how is this guy going to fit in the first round? How is that guy going to fit in the first round? They had such a good year. There's been some major fall offs from guys who have been pretty consistent performers in the back end of the first round. And even in front, there's more question marks than normal, just with, you know, a few big injuries. We'll get into it. I'm curious to see where some of these guys go. But the first round this year, I think, will look a lot different than what it has in the last few years, which is exciting.
Okay, so the format we got lined up here is we're doing a snake draft with Steve having the first pick. So no pressure, Steve. But
that was a cooling waters work. I asked AI to just randomize the draft order there.
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put our guest right in the middle. You and I got the swing picks because Dan is number two. I am number three. So then I'll have pick four, Dan pick five, so on and so forth. And we'll go up to 15 players. So it is – we'll each have – what is it? Four picks? Is that right?
Five players.
Yeah, that's simple math. Yeah, five times three. But we'll do we'll each get five picks, and that will complete a 15-team draft. So I guess the way we're setting this up mentally is we're trying to predict where the market will value players. So it's not necessarily like, you know, me picking Jordan Walker because I really want him on my team. It's more I'm trying to pretend, you know, what 1 through 15 will be, which is a pretty tricky exercise, especially for this year. And then after we get through it all, we will zoom out and talk about the biggest surprises, maybe some interesting value spots where you might want to mark like your KDS preference. Of course, we're not getting into second round and all that stuff, but we'll get to some fun topics afterwards. So any further ado, any thoughts? Dan, are you feeling fired up? You ready for this?
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, I think something with the first round is how I always think about it is like it's kind of like tiered. Like you kind of get like when you – especially in our league at home, you kind of get your pick and you're wondering where you're going to be. I kind of think of it as like a top, I haven't even really looked at the players yet, but I always kind of think of it as like a top three, top four. And then there's like that middle group. Mm-hmm. And then there's that group at the end where they could, you kind of move towards the end and it could be first rounders. It could be second rounders. So I think that's kind of a good way to look at it for us is like, who's going to be in that like elite tier where the no doubt kind of first overall, second overall, third overall, who's that middle tier, and then who's the kind of like the snaky guys mm-hmm. that as you come into the second round, you're kind of looking to?
Yeah, absolutely. And that top tier has varied, right? It's like for years, it was tier one of one with like Mike Trout. And then it seems like in recent years, it's been like a two or three at most, like a four player tier. So that'll be a great discussion topic as well. But we'll have 15 names. We'll talk about them as they come up, I'm sure. And we got discussion after. So I think, Steve, why don't you set us off with pick 1-1?
Yeah, I'm not going off the board or anything. It's no surprise here. I am going Shohei Ohtani.
Interesting.
I think that there maybe is some room for an argument to go elsewhere. You know, the overall fantasy stats of home runs and steals are down a little bit. He did have two homers today. So, you know, there is that, he's at 26 homers. Like you probably want him to be a little bit higher there. There's also the question of the stolen bases, right? That those have gone down a bit. But overall, I still think that he is the safest player on the board. To take first overall here. And honestly, like I think that there's been such a big push for him to be a Cy Young this year. He's put so much effort into getting healthy and being on the mound and being consistent. That's obviously not been the case recently, but I just wonder if maybe that goes on the back burner a little bit and he, you know, is okay with pitching 100, 115 innings rather than trying to push to get to the 160, 175 with elite ratios that he would require. Just because, you know, his best hitting years have been when he has not pitched. You know, the last 3 years, he's had 44, 54, and 55 homers, and his total for innings pitched in those years have been 132, 47, and then none in 2024 when he had the 55 and, you know, 50 steals. So it's amazing what he's doing together. I just think that, you know, with maybe a slightly less focus on pitching, he goes back to those, you know, elite counting stats and homers plus steals total. Like the triple slash is still amazing and elite. Like the floor that you're buying offensively with him is absolutely incredible. So I have no qualms with that, and am okay with taking Otani here with the first overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you kind of scratch your head at because, it, like you said, it was coming in. It's like 24 home runs. A lot of the guys we'll talk about tonight are already in the mid-30s, right? So when the speed tapers off, obviously the lineup context is still great. He's sitting at 70 runs, 70 RBIs, but the homer-to-fly ball rate is 21%, which definitely seems like an outlier. The last three seasons, it was hovering around 30. So
Bauer rate is down too compared to the last 3 years, right? Okay. I mean, it's still good, but it's down.
Yeah. And I mean, he's been pretty consistent. I mean, there was a four homer month in May, but otherwise it's been kind of same old Otani. I guess to me, I do think, to be honest, I'm not as chalky on 1-1 as I'm looking at this. Dan, I'm curious, did you have Otani in your mind at pick one, or did you have somebody else? You don't have to say the name. I don't want any spoilers, but curious if you liked Otani there.
It's funny with Otani is like you're going to hear in the off season kind of like what their plan is with him pitching wise. And like, that's really going to dictate what he's going to be offensively. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think at 1-1, like, we're looking at, like, if he's the Otani we know, it's 50-50 is like kind of what you're kind of hoping for. And that's just like if he's going to run, you know. And I think it's just the unicorn in him is kind of like how where you want to invest at the number one pick. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that you want to shoot for the moon.
And I still think, though, if you get what he's doing again this year, like, let's say there is a big focus and he comes out again in the offseason, like he said last year, that he wants to win the Cy Young, like, you're still getting, you know, a 280 batting average, 400 OBP, 540 to 600 slug. Like, it's still really, really good as a floor, even if there is, you know, okay, I'm going to again try to go for, you know, 150, 160, 170 innings. Just because, I hear the concerns. Like, you can't expect those gaudy offensive totals, you know, otherworldly offensive totals when he is putting this much emphasis onto pitching. But I don't know. I think that maybe, you know, as he's adding these innings on his arm, as he's getting a bit older, there may be a plan here to sort of limit that and focus on the hitting. Just because the numbers don't lie. Like, they are less amazing. They're still amazing. They're less amazing when he is pitching. So
yeah, some struggles. Say, like, go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Van. I would say he's going to be age 33 season next year. So you're still in kind of the prime of Otani. I think you're not worried about him
falling off a cliff. Off yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah. So like, he's still the superstar that he is right now. Maybe you have to adjust a little bit for the stolen bases. Maybe kind of he pulls back a little bit doing that. But I mean, I always think about if you were at second overall and someone didn't take Otani, you'd be so
pumped. Oh, yeah. So, like, that kind of shows so that
he's tiered.
Yeah. No, I hear you. The only thing I was going to add in is he had earlier, like 4 years back, had some struggles with like breaking balls in comparison. And that went away for the last 3 years when he's been otherworldly. But this year it's some issues, but you really got to squint. And I'm with you that it's like, you know, you're really splitting hairs if you're saying Otani's past it or something. It's definitely not the case. All right, Dan, you're up number two. Very eager to hear this one, because then I'll know who's falling to me.
Number two, I would go Aaron Judge. To me personally, this is kind of the swing I like to take. Listen, I know he's injured. He's been injured this year. And I know that the batting average has fallen off a lot. You know, he's down from 331 last year to 250 this year. His slugging dropped off. His on-base dropped off, but it's still – he still was a 907, 910 OPS guy when he went down. And I feel like he was moving along, but we hadn't gotten the Aaron Judge like really big hot streak yet. Listen, at second overall, I'm looking for somebody who's going to be a league wrecker. and you know, we play, Stav and I play head to head, and like Aaron Judge in a head to head league, like you walk into the wrong week against him and it's murder. And personally, like outfield, I haven't really looked at positional wise, but to me, having Aaron Judge on your team is kind of, it's not the cheat code that Ohtani is, but it's close. And so that's kind of where I would want to be. You know, this year, who knows if he comes back, but you're looking at probably age 34, 35 season. I don't think the Aaron Judge story is near done yet. So am I going to pencil him in for 50 homers? No, but I mean, is he going to give you 40 plus? Definitely. Is the average probably going to come back? Yes. So I would be investing very much in Aaron Judge. And I know you're getting no discount on what happened this year, but I'd be eager to have him on my team next year.
I like it. I actually had Judge as pick one over Ohtani, which I thought might have been bold. But so far, the Ohtani, Ohtani Judge is exactly what we had last year. Yeah. So, I don't know. Steve, would we get any pushback? I know the injuries have been, they haven't been like soft tissue
for me
in the past.
For me. You know, I think that if he comes, and there was talk today that he's cleared for baseball activities, starting a rehab soon, and said he's coming back this season. Like, I think, you know, after this rehab assignment, when he's back, and if he has, you know, six homers, seven homers in September or something, like, there'll be no question, and it'll probably be an argument for him to be one again. You know, I know that this is like Judge has sort of closed the, at least in the last 2 years, even three of four, has closed the book on the narrative of him being injury prone, right? Like from 2022 to 2025, his game total games were 157 to 106, where he had the freak toe injury in LA, then 158, 152, with like long playoff runs involved in there too. So like, yes, this is concerning in a bad injury, but I'm treating this more similarly to what happened to him in 2023 with that one off rather than, oh, soft tissue, like you got to bake in 2 to 3 IL stints. Yes, there is aging, but I think these two guys are, you know, they're Hall of Fame players. You have to place them differently on the aging curve rather than, you know, your standard aging players.
Yep, I think there's not a ton to add, and those two are pretty fixed up there.
I'm really curious where you're going here, Van. This is where I think it opens up.
It gets real interesting. So this is tough, and it's like you don't want to talk about that many names because we'll probably get to them coming up. Yeah. But I've got to say that the one industry wise that I think would have gone here. I can't have because he just got injured, and it'll be interesting to see if a James Wood name pops up So then the next one I'm kind of split a little bit, and I think I could go where it's probably expected of last year, but I'm actually going to spice it up. This is going to be hot takey here, but I think with the twitchiness of fantasy leagues, and we've seen in the past, whether it's a Trey Turner or a Bo Bichette, when somebody has an eye-popping back of the baseball card year, pair it with age, pair it with speed, we've seen people get pretty hasty on moving people into the top five. Guys, I'm throwing PCA out at number three, and that's a bold take, but you're looking at a guy who will probably round out at like 35. He has been otherworldly in recent months. And it's a guy that when you look just age 24, he's one of the few that could be that 40-40 type of mold. And I think last year you were already seeing helium, and we were a fade on this show. At 30, he was 32nd guy off the board last year. So for him to basically be surging past what he's got now, there's a lot of names out there, and it's not necessarily who I would take. Like, you know, I mean, Dan, you'll appreciate me hearing how much I love Juan Soto. I think Juan Soto or Witt feel like good ones, but I think this is where it opens up. And I think this is where the board might just basically expedite somebody who is eye-popping power speed average and probably going to end the season with triple digits, runs, RBIs. So hot take, keeping it interesting. Want to hear how far off you guys think this one is.
I don't think it's that far off at all. I don't know if I would have made this pick at three, but I don't think he would have made it past, you know, me in this quote unquote second round, you know, my second pick here, had that been the case. There's been some, you know, real improvements just across the board as far as, you know, the chase rate. They're still not elite and not like, you know, it's not like Peter Armstrong's this plate discipline god or anything like that and has this amazing, you know, plate approach or anything like that. But it is improved, and there's enough there, like, for him to produce with that profile, right? I think a lot of times, like, with high strikeout guys, with guys that chase, guys that swing and miss a lot, like, we automatically sometimes fall into the trap of dismissing them and talk about wanting to expand our risk profile to include these guys. Like, Crow Armstrong is the perfect example of that, right? And not only, you know, the fact that his chase percentile has gone from 42%. Last year to 34% this year, you know, it's gone from, you know, essentially worst in the league to bottom quarter, 26th percentile for chase rate. The fact that the bat speed is improved as well as all the quality of contact metrics, like that's what led to this breakout. He's mashed lefties this year. He's like a 930 OPS versus lefties this year. The year before that, it was like in the 600s. So a really big improvement there. The speed is such a good floor. The power is such a good floor. Like, sure, yeah, there may be some streakiness like we saw here in April, but there's been just market improvements across the board. I don't have many qualms with this, even though it may not have been the pick that I would have made a three overall.
All right. Penny, for your thoughts, Dan, PCA.
I was invested this year, and unfortunately I traded him, but the thing why I was invested this year, and I think it speaks to this spot as well, is when I took him, I think it was the 3-4 snake this year on a 12 team league. I was looking to take a guy who I thought could make this jump, like make the jump from that mm-hmm. spot to the first round. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I look at this so far and you say, how can he move up from three? If Ohtani or Aaron Judge don't have the year that they have next year, who's going to be filling in that spot? And like, so at three, he could be a number one guy next, like in 2 years. So I think there's even value there where, you know, the ceiling of him is just immense.
Yeah.
Like, and he's a gamer. He plays every day. He kind of, you know, I think he started a little slow this year and that's what kind of got me worried about him.
Yeah.
But as Stav said, like everything has kind of, the discipline has been better. He's just a true superstar. And the power speed combo is just, it's breathtaking. And I think that he's the closest thing to kind of that five category, like stud, like homer, hits a homer, makes a game winning catch and steals like two bases. Like it's just, he's an incredible player. And so I think that investing in kind of a talent like him, there's no reason, no way you can go wrong there. And I think the floor has proven to be kind of safe now.
Like yeah.
The average isn't going to be something where it's going to be scary. And that's kind of what scared people off this year was that there was kind of going to be a trap door. And I think that he's kind of put together a good second half last year he fell off in the second half last
year,
but I think,
yes.
And that's what scared people.
It was like 4 months in a row of concerning just because his April was so bad. And, you know, you saw everyone in April posting the Savant slider. It's like, this was the guy that was supposed to break out. Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. Look at like what happened. You know,
how old is he? 24?
He's 24. He's 24.
Yeah.
He's a gamer. Like he talked today about how like, you know, he's competing and wanting to compete for MVPs. Like he cares about, like he's a guy that clearly cares about like his numbers, which we love in fantasy, right? Like they want to get like Acuna a few years ago, right? Like every time he got on first, he stole a base and wanted to have 9 million steals, right? Yeah. Like he wanted to be 40-70 so bad, right? Like we love that as fantasy players. He has that sort of gene, right?
Totally. So, I mean, if you, when we get through the end of the first round, I can guarantee you, P, PCA is the one who cares the most about his stats and like as a fantasy manager. But I think it's fair to challenge that this feels like plenty of min picks will be as high as this. But will the ultimate average shake out this way? Tough to say, but that's our first round to start. Otani, Judge, pretty chalky, and then a wild card with PCA there. A lot will ride on how he finishes the season out to whether or not this one comes true. But we are going to take our first ad break and get to our second picks at pick 4 overall right after this. Okay, so it is right back to me. So I've got PCA. Doesn't really matter about team build or anything because, again, this is just looking at kind of who we will think will go in order. Again, I got to kind of curb the table talk here. But I am going to go with – it's tough. I'm flipping a coin between two names. But I will say Bobby Witt Jr. Okay. And I think this was kind of – this and another name were in my head of like, do I want to bring up them or PCA? And I think – I went PCA because of that, what you said, Dan, kind of the highest flash on five category. And Witt, it's a little unfair to say that, but now we're looking at a decline from 2 years ago where he was 32 homers, 31 steals. Last year it was 23 homers. Right now he's sitting at 13. He does have the 30 steals. The average has kind of come down as well, but I think when you look under the hood, there's not a whole lot that is that concerning. I mean, the team context and offense is concerning, but you expect his batting average to be well above the 281 that it's at. And so then you start building this case that the floor for Bobby Witt Jr. is kind of what we're seeing this year. I mean, it's another guy, 26 years old. He's supposed to get better year over year with how good he is, all the pedigree. And we're probably looking at a floor that's going to be something like 18, 20 homers, 40 steals. The counting stats are a little bit low with that offense, which maybe if there's enough chatter there, we'll push him behind a few picks here. But one thing I do want to note as it relates to the draft landscape is that shortstop is not exactly what it's been in the past. So if people are kind of hunting for positions, this is one that I could see having some scarcity. So There is Ellie, but Trey Turner and a handful of others.
Gunner stepped down.
He's Lindor. Yeah. Corey Seager. Like, there's just a lot of names that, you know, certainly aren't like first round worthy, but people are probably going to be going into next year's draft saying, I've got to address shortstop. So yeah, it might be a tiebreaker that puts Witt even at third ahead of PCA. But I do think with those two side by side, when you look at PCA's pull air rate, and some of the firecracker tiebreakers with like just how he's wired, certainly lineup context and counting stats. I mean, when you add those up, PCA is probably going to have him on projections by 25 runs and RBIs. That's where I ultimately landed on the order. But talk to me about Bobby Witt Jr. Do you guys feel like this feels about right? I'll start with you, Dan, and just kind of quick hits on these. But thoughts on Bobby Witt at 4.
Yeah, you know, I think that people are going to be are eager to invest in him. I don't think he's had a down year. It's not been what kind of people wanted when they took him kind of that second, third overall. But I think that which would make me want to jump back in. I think you're looking hopefully that next year, you know, the power maybe jumps a little bit more. The steals have been there this year. Like you said, the scarcity of the position, there's a lot of guys that are kind of falling off. I think it's weird. He's kind of unsexy in a weird way, but he's also
30-30 guy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's like it's not sexy, but he's safe.
Yeah.
And I think you're heading into his age 27 season. Like, I think you really could see that, you know, hopefully that 30-30 season where he just has, you know, 200 hits and plays 160 games and has like 45 doubles and just a million extra base hits and it's a stud every day. So I like it.
Yeah. I think this is a down year for him and a good buying opportunity. I think like he probably won't be a top two pick, but you know, can perform like a top two pick very easily. I think this is good value. Like, I thought that, you know, Kansas City moved in the fences this year, and it really hasn't played out. Like, no, like, and maybe that, that's just a fact that the Royals just don't have that good of an offense. Like, there really hasn't been like this boost for, you know, I remember waiting and, you know, looking to see how, you know, these fences that moved in so much, and, you know, in April, it just really never took off. And despite, you know, the happy fun ball returning and the summer home run months coming, it really hasn't had the impact that, you know, other fence moves have. That being said, like, you know, the hard hit rate for Bobby Witt is up. The barrel rate's in line with what he did last year. Like, you know, his home run, the fly ball rate is the lowest of his career. Like, I think it'll be, you know, a floor of like 25 homers, 290, 30 steals, 35 steals next year, and he'll be as much of a lock as anyone to turn in first round value. So like the pick there.
Yeah, crazy to talk about him as kind of a oatmeal pick at 26 much star power. Like, yeah. I think we'd be shocked if we look back on his career and see the high watermark being, you know, 2 years into his career. So, all right, over to Dan for your second pick.
Since we're not really doing scarcity kind of team building
pick
here.
Pick five.
It's first round. Yeah, it's.
I would say pick five. I think if I had it and it worked out this way, I would take James Wood at pick five. I was between him. I thought about Junior Caminero, but I think the steals with Wood kind of give him that, kind of put him over for me. I know he's injured right now, but it's just been an unbelievable player. I mean, he leads the league in runs and walks, which is like crazy. He's got 30 bombs, 17 steals, 928 OPS. Like, I really like Junior Caminero, and I think that third base it's like a pretty scarce position when you really look at it. Mm-hmm. But I think Wood is just like, if I had to like bet on somebody to just be 40 homers next year for sure, the power is just immense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of 25 steals at least. It's weird. His like hulking size makes me want to invest in him. Like this 6'6" guy, he's like, you feel like he could hit 50 homers and you wouldn't be surprised. So he's kind of a guy that I want to get invested in. And I would be curious to see how he finishes up this year. Obviously the injury is not something you want to see, but we'll see how it goes. But he's a guy that I think, again, the ceiling is tough to even think about. It could be 50 homers, 30 steals. Like, you're really getting into rarefied air there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of where I would go.
Yeah, Steve, I'm curious to hear you on this one. I originally had Wood right after Judge and Ohtani at three. I just wonder, we know how nasty oblique strains can be, if that would be enough to keep the line down this year. And then people point to just some of the stuff that's hanged with him a little bit on the plate discipline. But where are you at on Wood? Do you think five would be late for him next year?
Selfishly, the oblique for me is like, okay, this is just going to give a little bit of a discount. Like, maybe I can get him at four or five in drafts next year, because he was trending to be like, I'm sure he is number two on the Fangraphs player radar. I'm sure in a lot of league settings, he's one. You know, in ours, Dan, it's actually pretty interesting that the number one hitter is Peaker Armstrong, and then Wood is the third hitter. I won't spoil who the second hitter is, because he's someone that might get taken. It would be an interesting name, at least in our league setting. So, like Wood, I think of this has the potential to be maybe, as strange as this is, like the most potential to be like the number one player next year, even though he's going five here. Just considering the age, considering the trajectory that he's on, considering the fact that, you know, he has 30 homers and 530 plate appearances and 17 steals, and has improved the strikeout rate, you know, 4 percentile points from last year, is walks a ton, knows the zone, doesn't chase, has a 21% barrel rate, a 58% hard hit rate, like everything you want to see from the quality contacts department, like, has easy power to all fields. Like, the fact that I didn't have so many shares of James Wood after last year, despite the second half, like, I just remember telling myself, like, this guy is him, like, in the first half of the last season. I know there were some injuries that led to the second half, and the elevated strikeout rate scared myself and others off. But, yeah, I won't be making the same mistake next year with James Wood. That is a very good pick there.
I think that, yeah, team context is definitely improving. Yeah, yeah. With the good front ballpark, office.
Great to hit in the summer. Like, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, at age 23, I mean, a lot of what we've said about PCA applies to James Wood, that it's like, you know, what's this player look like if the Ks do come down? Like, that's not unfathomable. So I really like it. Just looking at the board here, now we have Ohtani, Judge, PCA, Bobby Wood Jr., James Wood. Well, I would argue that it feels like it's that classic 1-2 and then a little bit of like a tier separation. I don't think that the tier separation indicates like the likelihood of who could finish one overall. Like, so far I feel like these five, compared to past years, like the betting odds of them finishing 1-1, a lot of them could do it. I mean, it would take a lot more, I think, for Witt, just because I feel like PCA and Wood have kind of that limitless ceiling in a way. And then Judge and Ohtani, it's just a question of like, is the floor going to hit at the wrong time? But anyway, I know that's...
It's actually kind of funny. Like, are the riskiest players the first two players taken here in a sense?
In terms of durability, probably. Yeah. I know we're talking about that.
Maybe in a weird way, they have the highest floor and highest ceiling in a weird way.
Right. But that's then, what like, makes the tiers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fascinating.
I mean, that's something I'm always looking for with my draft picks, though, is like I told you guys before, like I always am looking for somebody where it's like, can they jump a little bit and be, instead of a fourth rounder, a third, like a second rounder?
Yeah.
And James Wood at 5 overall. Can he go second overall in 2 years? First overall? Yes. Absolutely. Pete Armstrong, yes.
Yeah.
So like, there's always trying to scout value, even if you're in the first 5 picks.
Yeah. And 2 years ago, Witt was going, or there were articles about Bobby Witt first overall. You know what I mean? So it's
he was going first overall. He was a first pick.
He was first overall.
A lot of times over the last 2-3 years, like
and now it's like he's 26, so is he past it? But the team is past it. So Steve, you're up at pick 6 here for your prediction.
This is actually pretty interesting. I have someone on the board who I was considering at 1.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it a stop special?
Yeah.
Is it a stop special?
Yeah, it is. I'm going Yordan Alvarez here.
This
has just been, a reminder of how Alvarez is arguably one of the purest hitters, both power and contact wise, in the game this season. Like, what he has done is absolutely incredible. The discount that he went at last year, he was picked in NFBC in March. He was
39th off the board.
39th off the board.
30s,
absolutely insane. I have the March ADP up. He was the 40th pick. He was the closer to the back of the third round than the front. Absolutely insane. Insane value, insane steal. Like, I know that last year was very bad, but it just goes to show you, like, you can't, like, the recency bias of a year like that, it needs to be, you know, almost thrown out the window. Absolutely everything this guy does, like, if you were to make, like, I've said this a million times on this show, like, if you were to make a hitter in the lab, you make Yordan Alvarez. You know, the only thing that you maybe add is like if he's a switch hitter or something like that. But if you had to choose one side of the plate, you choose him as a lefty and you choose all of his quality. He doesn't strike out. He walks. He knows the zone. He hits the ball hard. He pulls the ball. He pulls the ball in the air. Like, he has power to all fields, so that almost doesn't matter. Like, this is, a hitter at the peak of his powers. And I know there's like the narrative before that of like, you know, oh, he's never hit 40 homers in the season. You know, he's always injured. And, you know, the last year was, you know, pretty bad. You know, even when he did play, it was six homers and 200 plate appearances. But it just goes to show you, like, you have to throw out small samples like that, injury-riddled seasons, when the track record for the player is an OPS that's, you know, usually starts with a 10. Like, that's how good this guy is. Mm-hmm. So I know there's no steals here, and I know that, you know, maybe the steal environment has cooled off a little bit, but honestly, like, I would if Yordan Alvarez is available at pick six for me next year, I am sprinting to the draft board and making the easiest pick of my life. That is how I feel about Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, it's crazy. I try to go, I'm like, you know, the Astros as an offense, for how good his counting stats are, he is carrying their offense. Like, team yeah, stats,
yeah.
They are up.
Yeah, their
near
offense
the top.
Isn't it good. Their
and
offense
you look at everybody
otherwise.
And it's just
yeah.
like it's just him, but he's still yeah. tracking to just put up video game numbers. He was number six on my board as well, Steve. So okay. I'm with you. Dan, quick thought on Yordan before we get Steve's pick seven.
Yeah, I have a couple shares of him, and it's just been incredible. Like, he's been the best player in baseball. I just like kind of the average has been incredible. So, Steve, I would ask you what eligibility rules. I'm pretty sure
so
in some leagues.
Let me see he where played. He's played some outfield this year.
Got maybe 10.
He's at 19 games in the outfield this year. Okay. So he'll get to 20, which is the NFBC eligibility. Like, and that, okay. that gets you most places outfield. So he'll have outfield for okay. next year. So.
Good question.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a no brainer, but just another guy who's an absolute kind of weak wrecker. Like,
yeah.
You run into Yordan in the wrong week and you're like, oh my god.
All your hitting all the hitting categories are lost, right? If that's yeah. the case, you know.
Yeah.
He kind of has like that Kyle Schwarber with average. It's like if yeah. Kyle Schwarber could hit for average.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, and you just pray that you don't get him in that hot week. But I mean, and also he'll be 30 next year. Like, this isn't a guy who's like pushing out of his prime. No. It's great ballpark. Yeah. I mean, I really kind of kicking myself. I don't have shares of him all across the board, but I was able to get a little bit of him, and it's been incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I got him in like most leagues except for, you know, our league, Dan, unfortunately. I don't know.
Yeah, that hurts. I was going to ask.
Sorry, go
like,
ahead, Dan.
This profile of like elite, you know, batting title paired with 40 homer pop, like Vlad had that high watermark year where he was in the 40s and hit like 310 or something. But I was even thinking, like, I don't even know if Freddie Freeman had a year with
38, 295. He did not have this power. He had, you know, yes. 30 homers, you know, high 30 homers in a
38 in one season. Year, 38 yeah, one yeah. year. But yeah, it, like, it's a short list other than Aaron Judge, where it's like speedless power and batting average. So yeah, it's going to be crazy to see where Alvarez ends up. Well, right now he's at 35 homers. You guys think he gets to 45 by the end of the year?
I think that's fair. 2 months left, 10 homers. Yeah. I mean, it's cooled off a little bit. There was a point where he had, you know, seemingly was homering like every night, and you know, you kind of you're reminded of how the season comes in waves, right? Like, he had 9 homers in April, 8 in May, 6 in June, 9 in July again, and just hasn't homered in so it's been pretty consistent, I guess. Which is, so yeah, he's pacing for what? He's pacing for, you know, 47, 48.
Yeah. Give him another 12.
Give him another 12. He has an outside shot of 50 this year.
Yeah.
If there's anyone that can do it, it's him.
Okay. So, Steve, are you back up or no?
Yeah. I am.
Up at 7.
And I'm very torn here. I have two guys that I want, and I know that whichever one I don't take, I'm not going to get. But I'm going to go with who Dan mentioned before. I'm going to go with Junior Caminero.
Okay.
Another guy that's just, you know, quality of contact, doesn't strike out. You know, there was concerns about the ballpark and everything like that. And what do you know? He's just having a better season than he did last year in Tropicana than he did in George Steinbrenner Field. And last year while the trap was being repaired. Like, basically, you know, everything that you said for Yordan Alvarez can be applied to Caminero, maybe a little bit less, like slightly. Like, I don't mean, like, no offense to Caminero at all, but like
hit tool.
Alvarez just on a different, like a slightly above, it's probably hit tool, and just, you know, launch angle and things like that. But, you know, you get third base with it, and I really don't think you can go wrong with Caminero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 6-7 years younger. I think Caminero is a great one. I actually did not have him here. I'm curious, Dan. Okay. Did you have him top seven? Okay.
Yes. Invested in him this year. It's been wonderful. Like, he's such a gamer. Like, people forget he had that. Like, he got hit in the hand in the All-Star game, and everyone was like freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just, like, he's come back and been completely fine. Like, this guy just rolls out of bed.
It's super fun to own, to roster Junior Caminero. I had him last year.
It's super fun.
And big thing, like, his on base has jumped.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 3 years ago, 299. And then last year, 311. This year, 370. Like, that jump of 60 points of on base, 20 points of slug. Like, he went from like an 850 guy, like with like a 130 OPS plus, which is great, to like the 930, 156 OPS plus, like MVP monster. And, you know, you're getting – it's going to be 40 homers at least and kind of going to play every day. It's just been a treat. And I think this position is so, like, scarce. You kind of had – you've had Machado kind of take a little bit of a step back.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of some of the guys that are – we've relied on at third base have kind of fallen off a little bit. So I think that this position – kind of crossing it off in the first round is a good way to build a roster. So yeah, I mean, super exciting. He's only what, 23 next year?
Yeah.
He just turned 23 now. So you're going to get, like, just like PCA, you're going to get like a really, really early 20 season that could, you know, who knows what it's going
to
be.
Another guy I would sprint to the draft board to get, and just to hit on that OBP, like, he was a 6% walk guy for the first 2 years. He had a 5% walk rate in that small sample when he came up in 2023. And that's double to 12%. The chase rates improved with it. Like, obviously, you know, pitchers are now afraid to pitch to him right after what he net to the 45 homers last year. So that plays into it. But, you know, you also have to, you know, work the strike zone. He's done a lot to improve there. And that's a big help in OPS and OBP leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the third base landscape is crazy with J-Ram taking the step back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy that he's not a top seven pick in a sense, right?
I know, right? And where's Kyle Tucker at pick seven? Yeah, I did have Caminero on my board at eight, so I'm with you guys. Okay. Yeah, big fan. So, Dan, you are up at pick number eight. Who do we got here?
It was between two guys, and again, I think I'm just going to side with the guy that I think safe isn't the right word, but I just, unless he gets hurt, I think he's just going to be an absolute monster. And I can't not take Juan Soto. Here.
That's also crazy that he hasn't been mentioned yet. Yeah.
I had him at five, actually. Yeah. I just think that, I want to hear you talk, but I'm nodding my head the whole time.
Yeah. You know, like, I the Mets have been such a mess this year that I think it kind of gets lost that he leads the league in OPS plus and on base and OPS. Like, he's been so good. And I know the homers, he's only got 21 homers, and the steals are definitely down, which is like they're at seven, but like he's such a weird guy that like he could steal 30 next year and you're like, oh, he's back running again. And he's just such an incredible baseball player that the fact that you could get him at this point in the draft and pencil him in for age 28, it's like you're going to get a prime Juan Soto year. You could get the best year of his career. And the on-base is always going to be there, which so that really mitigates the risk. You know, he's actually hit 20 points higher this year, batting average, slugging's up. Like, it's a better year. It's just been he's been hurt. So the calf has really bothered him. Like, I've watched a lot of the games.
There's your answer for the steals. He
rushed back from that. He was hurt early in the year. It was like maybe 2 weeks in. He got hurt. he rushed back because Lindor was out, tried to get back. And I think he came back and was just like, I'm not going to run. And I can just hit. And he did that. He can hit, not, he doesn't have to, but playing the outfield still. Yeah. So if he can have, honestly, I don't, he's pretty much like a guy who's, he's very not concerned, but he knows his place in kind of the record books and whatnot. So I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back just to kind of tack on some more home runs to his totals and finish the year strong. But if he doesn't, like, I wouldn't, if that knocks him and people think he's an injury risk, like,
there's your Alvarez, right? There's your, exactly. I honestly, like, I'm looking at player raters so far and in season results, and like, I literally missed Juan Soto, and like, he could have gone much higher, like Van said. Like, as much as I gushed about Alvarez and Caminero, like, there was a very, very strong argument that Juan Soto is a better pick than that.
And again, Juan Soto, you're getting him at 8. Could he go 3?
Yeah.
In 2 years? Yeah.
He can go 3 next year, and it's not a bad pick.
Yeah.
Right. It's so, not. Yeah, it's he's just an awesome baseball player, and he's so fun to own.
I mean for certainly for like points leagues, non-traditional leagues, like, you give him a big bump as well, especially for some of the plate discipline guys. But yeah, I had him at 5, and when I was saying PCA, to your point, Steve, on he could go 3rd next year, I was thinking to myself that, okay, I think Soto would actually probably be a safer pick here. Wood's a great one. It's just to the injuries. That's what makes this topic a lot of fun and way less sticky and predictable as past years when you've had the metronomes like Kyle Tucker or J-Ram up at the top. Like, there's a lot of volatility here. So it's going to be fun. And that middle of the draft in the first round for a long time has felt kind of boring. Like, I'll just take whichever one falls me this year. It feels you can still make a stance. Yeah.
Like, so, as good as J-Ram has been and as good as Tucker had been past, like, you kind of like, in the first round, you were kind of taking your medicines. Like, okay, you know, even though it was a good pick and, you know, better process than some of the guys on the end, like, you know.
You're like, do I have to take this guy?
Yes, you do. You know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of past years and trends, I feel like here we are at pick 9 where it comes to me, and it tends to be where somebody pounces. And I will throw out Jacob Mizorowski at pick 9. First of all, we gotta mention, and Steve, you and I are kicking ourselves, although I do have him in a couple shares of NFBC leagues. I don't in the one that counts most, the home league. And you and I were in big time as his ADP was fading for our Christmas episode. But his ADP last year was 120 in the month of March. And I do think he has every shout to go at pick 9. And talk about min picks, people will be reaching sooner. On the player raider, the gap on 5x5 value. Let me switch to 15 team just to make sure we're right. But the gap on 5x5 value, Mizorowski is the top pitcher, of course, at $42. The next one behind him is at $30. So major, major jump. After that, all the pitcher values are, you know, $2, $3 as you go through it. Everybody's familiar with what Mizorowski is doing. I think as it relates to fantasy purposes, like, of course, we're going to see talk about video game strikeout numbers, at least in the modern era. He's at 195 through 127 innings. But that inning threshold and him building up, of course, through postseason as well, pending health, which is the biggest if of all, I think that Mizorowski has just put any doubts to bed that this is like out and out SP1 with, you know, just throwing 104 miles per hour, like 6 pitches in a row. He's got everything that you would want in terms of the extension, the movement. Like, he is the pitcher version of built in a lab. And yeah, 6'7" frame. The Brewers have all the trust in the world. Should be a lot of win context there. So I think this is a spot for Mizorowski. Quick thoughts from you guys, if this feels appropriately placed at pick 9, or if you think he might be sliding further back, or maybe you guys don't think he's SP1 because of volume or some other reason. But let's hear it about Miz.
I think he's the clear SP1 and should be head and shoulders above the rest. Like, maybe there's an argument to take another pitcher here at the end with one of the last picks. I'm sure there is, and maybe there will be another one in this little exercise here, but not before Mizorowski. Like all those, like to me, like he's qualmed all those quantity issues. The fact that he has 127 innings already is cruising through the season, and maybe that'll change in the last 2 months here, but there's no signs of that stopping now. And just the fact that he has a 41% strikeout rate, a 6% walk rate is absolutely mind-blowing. Like the fact that this guy that was the biggest reliever risk, like to the fact that like it wasn't like he wasn't even that big of a prospect. I remember, yeah, Mizorowski, like in Dan and I's league, like we have NA slots and minor slots. And I remember 2 or 3 years ago, like I would put Mizorowski in the list just in one of those spots because he was a guy that could come up. Now, it's not a keeper league or anything like that, but like that's how exciting he was. Like, yeah, there's some walk, but he's striking out the world. Then it got to the point where it's like, okay, this guy may not even be able to make it as a reliever with how much he couldn't find the zone, and some of the luster wore off, and that was quickly restored and proven wrong. Once he made those adjustments after, I think it was the spring breakout game in 2025, the year before he came up last year. And I think he had like a bad inning, walked a bunch of guys and worked with one of the Brewers pitching coaches and was like, you need to be able to consistently repeat your mechanics to be able to throw strikes consistently. And that unlocked him. And now we literally have the biggest freak that at least I've ever seen on a mound. Mm-hmm. And I mean that in the kindest words, like what he is doing both result wise and process wise is just absolutely mind blowing. It's super fun to watch. And honestly, like, you know, I don't think I've ever taken a pitcher in the first round in fantasy baseball since maybe like the first year I played back in like, you know, 2009 or something like that with like Roy Halladay. If Mizorowski continues on this trend and I have a back end pick like that this guy could potentially change that.
Yeah. I mean, if you could put him at 165 innings as a projection, like, look out. But Dan, your thoughts? Any concerns other than the fact that, like, please don't let your arm fall off with being such a primary fastball thrower?
I mean, that's every pitcher, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you're kind of baking that into the risk. It's just he's – last year, his second half, he struggled a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, his ERA was over 4. And I think his secondaries were kind of – not mediocre, but they weren't kind of what you wanted to see. And I think Steve has said it, like, he's basically turned into a pitcher in a lot. Like, to me, he reminds me like the new age Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah.
Just with like that fastball and that tight slider that's like he's throwing it at speeds that you see on the gun and it's just incredible. So, yeah, he that's a league winner no matter where you take him. Yeah. And I think the health thing, like, you kind of just have to kick that to the curb. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see where he finishes up this year, innings wise, because they're going to have the handcuffs on him, but like they seem to, they're taking it a little easy with him. And then we'll see what happens in the postseason. He's going to add innings there. So if you kind of add those all together, you can probably project out what he's going to throw next year. And 200 isn't what it used to be. So, I mean, I'm kicking myself. I don't have more shares of him, and he's the type of guy where, God forbid, you face him in a 2-star week.
Yeah.
Like, forget it.
Okay, so that's Mizorowski. Man, like, you could blow the lid off with a couple of these picks. I'll try to do what, not what's best for the pod, and what is true to the topic, which is who I think will go next. And it's not as fun, but it's kind of like the Bobby Witt when you say, is Ellie De La Cruz a boring pick? Just because he is one that you're kind of looking more at the full body of work than just what has popped in 2026. But he's showing floor in a better sense than he has in years past. The batting average has come up from what we thought was like, okay, we can count on him to be a 260 hitter. To 278 and expected batting average right behind that. 18 homers, 21 steals. I mean, you would hope more for the speed, of course, when he was putting up crazy 67 homer 67 steal seasons. He's been caught on the pads at a worse clip than in the past. So that's something to point at. But overall, it looks like he is maturing as a hitter in terms of batting average. You'd like to see the K rate a little bit better, but I like that overall, like he's a guy that's proven he can take a walk. The run total, despite that not being like a great offense this year, looks in pretty good shape. So I think Ellie, like when you look at the past 3 years, which oftentimes is how projection models work, right, is like you might see a down year, you know, for whatever the case. I think the same would apply to Bobby Witt, that next year it just might jump right back up because at age 24, you probably shouldn't be overreacting to one season looking slightly down compared to others. So I got Ellie here. And again, shortstop is kind of a shallow position, especially once you get past like the first two or three. So quick thoughts on Ellie, guys. And then I know we got to move a little bit quicker because we got a bunch of names to get through. But I got Ellie at pick 10 here.
I don't think it's a bad pick at all. And I think that maybe because some of those numbers haven't been as gaudy as we were hoping, and when he had the 67 steals when he first came up, I think that's overshadowed how he's matured as a hitter. Like the quality of contact is all elite. Like he's improved his strikeout rate from, you know, something that we thought would be untenable to something that, you know, is consistently below 30. You know, takes a walk like you said, and is, you know, fixed a lot of the holes in his game, right? Like there was concerns of him having to give up switch hitting just because he couldn't face lefties. He has a 190 WRC plus versus lefties this year. So you know, absolutely crushing them, where there was a point in the not too distant past that there was talk that he shouldn't be taking the bat from that batter's box. So I like the process. I think it's a good pick, even though, you know, how could you say Ellie De La Cruz is a boring player when he's like one of the most electric players? You know, the sprint speed is down. That is a little bit odd. And I know that he dealt with, you know, leg injuries and the quad injuries last year that he fought through and sort of led to that, you know, less than stellar second half. But like, he still has an outside shot at 30-30 this year. I mean, I think he'll at least get to like 25-30.
He did have a little hamstring stint this year as well, so that might have been factoring in there. But Dan, quick thoughts on Ellie before we keep rolling?
Yeah, you know, like there's been signs though that he's really maturing as a player though. Like again, on base is up to 356. It was 330, which is like kind of slugging is up 50 points this year, and he's like kind of he's at that 132 OPS plus, which is like the years before it was like 112, 119. He was kind of like that a little bit above league average kind of guy. And now he's getting into that area where you're like, wow, I could really see him making a jump and becoming like the MVP Ellie De La Cruz. And I look at him and then I look at Bobby Witt and, you know,
kind of similar, right? They're kind of similar, right?
How many picks later and the arrow with Ellie kind of feels like it's kind of side, maybe not trending up, but just kind of sideways. And I think that there's a good time to buy because you're also getting him into age, like again, it's age 24 season. So like the jump I think has been encouraging. I don't think it's what people have wanted because people want him to have like a 40-40 season, but that could be the next year. Yeah. And so I think with a better eye and better slug this year, like there's a lot to build off of.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, that's an early, do you draft this, not that? Yeah, I think the pop is what you know, the wit people would point to and say like, oh, I think he's closer to a 30 homer guy, but yeah, not this year. So totally fair. All right, back
best
to Dan.
Best walk rate, best barrel rate, best hard hit rate of Ellie's career. Best chase rate, best swing strike rate. Like there is a lot, best contact rate. You know, a lot to like. With process stats for Ellie under the hood.
I like it. All right, Dan, over to you for pick 11.
Pick 11? Okay, so now we're getting into the area where I feel like this guy would go, and I'm going to go Nick Kurtz. I don't know if that's a shock, but I think obviously first base isn't a position where, you know, I think 11 makes sense for him. Kind of see some of those first basemen get taken off the board at the end of kind of the 12 team rounds. to me, the home ballpark is just something that's so like encouraging. And are they playing there next year?
I don't even think they've broken ground on the Vegas stadium, if that even is.
So that place is just, his home away splits are, I just had them up. He was like, I think he's like a 990 at home.
Yeah, you're right.
But his road is like not like the course field. Like it's like 750 on the road. And he had a little bit of a slow start this year, but I think this is the type of guy where you're going to lock in, you know, 40 plus homers. If that, like you could be looking at a lot more. The average isn't going to kill you. He's down. He was 290 last year, and this year he's 256. But I think you're kind of looking at like a 900 OPS 40 homer guy. And that is something that I would very much want to invest in. And even this year he's got 7 steals. So like, let's say you get 40 homers, 45 homers and 12 steals and a 900 OPS, like sign me up.
Steve, we were probably 2 or 3 shows ago where we said Nick Kurtz is a first rounder.
Yeah.
Then he's just gotten a little cold. And
there's been injuries. Yeah. Two IL stints, I think. So,
but yeah, curious your thoughts on Kurtz here.
I mean, as much cold water has been thrown on as possible since that episode, essentially, right? When we were singing his praises. And I think that it's a good job by Dan here to, you know, ignore that sort of short-sightedness of the injuries that have taken place, right? Like if you look at his numbers right now, it's like, oh yeah, Nick Kurtz had a pretty good year, like 879 OPS, 21 homers, 430 plate appearances. Yeah, that's pretty good. But like there was, you know, before that hot streak, before that injury, there was a hot streak of hot streaks, and it was like him and James Wood are the two best hitters in the league. For a few months running there. So how easily we forget with some injuries there. So I like the pick and honestly think that that could provide some value here. I know that's been something that you're aiming for. It's like, okay, who could take some jumps here?
Yep.
Kurtz is definitely one of those guys that you know can produce like a top 5 player for sure. He was doing that for several weeks before this injury.
Yep. And it kind of has shades of, in a way, like last year's Caminero in terms of like draft placement and in terms of like could easily pop off for 40 homers. The hit tool could come back up.
Is it the ballpark that's elevating this? Like, you know, similar stories. Yeah.
Yeah. The 32% K rate, I tend to like fade off of these guys, but I think you're right. And true to the game, I could see this being like a helium pick late. And you know what I mean? If he has a big spring or something that everyone's just like, oh yeah, Kurt's got to go. Love it there. Okay. So that is 11 over to Steve for pick 12. And you're on the swing for your last two picks.
Yeah. So for speed purposes here, I'll make both my picks at the same time. And I think they're both interesting. We'll have to talk about them. But for 12, I'll take Ben Rice. For 13, I'll take CJ Abrams.
I was wondering about Abrams.
Yeah. You know, guys with probably the least track record on this list that we've taken so far, but the production and the years that they've had, CJ Abrams is that player that hit that. He is a third among hitters on the player radar in our league settings. Dan, he is the second hitter behind Pete Carroll Armstrong, and that we have a few unique categories there, but. Yeah, I mean, Rice, what's there not to like? I know you lose the catcher eligibility this year. I don't think he's played any games at catcher, but it just goes to show you, you know, how good of a hitter overall he is, right? Like, another guy, it's like Yordan Alvarez, right? Light, doesn't strike out that much, has elite plate discipline, has the quality of contact that you love to see, the ballpark, the lineup context. Like, I could only imagine how much this guy's numbers would improve if Judge was in the lineup. And I know there's been some tapering off from that amazing start, but he's still been great. And then Abrams, like, you know, you talk about shortstop, you talk about, you know, some of these guys that have fallen out of the first round. Abrams has stepped up and filled that void, you know, This is what we were hoping from Gunnar Henderson. This is what we're hoping from Fernando Tatis. This is what we're hoping for from Kyle Tucker. It's just, you know, the consistent average and mid-20s and 20 steals, 20 homer, 20 steal combo is hard to find, and Abrams is doing it, and I don't see any reason why it shouldn't continue next year. I know that I've talked about some concerns about, you know, a few of the numbers not necessarily lining up, and the quality of contact and bat speed and skills improving, but not to a point where, you know, you could fully buy in. But at some point, you just have to trust the results. And honestly, even with the floor of what he's done the last 2 years, being a 20-30 guy, you know, we wish cast a lot of guys to be 20-30. Not many actually do it. And that's his floor. But there is some real gains here, and I think that makes him a back end of the first rounder here with pick 13.
Yeah, I mean, for as much as I've been on the record, and we don't need to belabor it, kind of the anti-CJ Abrams propaganda, we've talked about how he's completely kind of reinvented what you can expect from him. He's been like a poster boy along. I mean, Wood is kind of like, we saw a version of this last year, but Abrams has kind of flipped the script. So I actually had Abrams above Rice in my power rankings, Steven, okay, even though I've rostered Rice, just because I do feel like first baseman, and maybe that's a theme, is we're starting to see a cluster of first basemen. So maybe it's a spot in the draft where you want to like jump in if you can. Mm-hmm. But yeah, both interesting picks. Dan, your thoughts on these two? Anything you want to punch in on?
No, you know, I think Abrams, like Steve and I have kind of, we've always been a believer in him, but haven't thought he'd been able to keep this elite level going. Especially kind of after it seemed like the Nats had soured on him.
There was trade rumors this year. There was
big time trade rumors with him this offseason. It seems like he's kind of not grown. I don't want to say he's grown up, but it seems like he's taken things a lot more seriously.
I think he has, right? Remember the Chicago casino incident?
Yeah.
At the end of 2024, right? Like, he was suspended for the rest of the season. Like, he was at a casino like a few hours before a game, a day game in Chicago. Like, yeah, there's definitely been maturity. There was stories about him going to the drive line this offseason, taking that more seriously. Like, this is a guy that clearly had all the natural ability in the world. And that's sort of, you know, coming to fruition. And I think it's fair to say that there's been some maturity, even though maybe, you know, you don't necessarily know exactly what's going on behind the scenes, but I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
The Ben Rice stuff, I would just say, like, I feel like, again, there's like a first base group that's going to like exit stage left, and you're kind of getting that new age group with Nick Kurtz and Ben Rice. Kind of like the Freddie Freemans of the world are kind of not going to be like the, you know, the Freeman, the Pete Alonso. You're kind of getting that group of, even Rafael Devers, like you're getting that group to kind of move out, and you're getting this new age group to come in. So I mean, I love the pick. He's such a great player. Like, and the stadium is built so perfectly for him. Yeah. Like, so I like this.
Well, yeah, it's great. And I mean, you're looking at a 27-year-old and Rice, 25-year-old and Abrams. So talking about getting guys on the ascent of their career, both of those would check the box there, which crazy. Abrams got pretty decent track record at this point for being just 25 years old. But we're going to get to Dan's, let's see, fourth pick. And we will get to that, but we're going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, we're back. It is Dan's fifth pick. So where are we on the actual list here? This is pick 14, and then I will end with 15. So pick 14 in the first round. Dan, on the clock.
So this one was tough. Like, I'm definitely starting to feel like there's a little bit of a teardrop now, where I the previous four, I was very much like, okay, like, I wonder if that guy gets to me type thing. Here, I've kind of struggled with who I'm going to take. I think if I had to go with how I see the offseason working, I think that this would be, for me, would be Tarik Skubal as the second pitcher off the board. Let's just hypothetically say he resigns with the Dodgers. That's where I think that he would be this pick here. Mm-hmm. I want to say that I want to hold an out where if he doesn't, then maybe it would be somebody else. There just weren't many names here that I kind of considered having that better upside than. Obviously, health is a little bit of a risk. Another guy that you really want to see how he finishes the year with the Dodgers, pitches into October. But if he looks like kind of the guy that we all know he is, then I don't think you have a worry. I did think about Yamamoto, Chris Sanchez, mm-hmm. are two guys I think are really interesting yep. here. I didn't consider Skeens. Maybe that's just my preference, but that's where I was going to head with this pick.
Yeah, I think Scooble's a good one. A couple shows ago, talked about how I think Cam Schlittler has mm-hmm. a decent shout for being up there with like SP2. Steve, quick thoughts on Scooble at this spot?
No qualms with it. I think there are several options you can go. I think you can go Schlittler. I think you can go Yamamoto. But Scooble, I think, mixes that blend of upside. You know, the results are, you know, basically as good as they've been the last 2 years. The only thing is, you know, there has been the slight injury concern, you know, and who knows if that's a foreshadowing of things to come. But you can't argue with the results, and I think it's totally reasonable to take Scooble as the second SP off the board. And yeah, we'll talk about this as we wrap it up, but this is where it gets interesting, because a lot of the guys who are back end first round picks, it's like, yeah, like there's not a lot of guys to trust here at this point. I think that goes to show with maybe taking a bit of a reach on Rice and Abrams with my last two picks, but, an interesting point of the draft for sure.
Okay. All that you said is true. I think that, at this point, part of me wanted to go back to the well, right? Of mm-hmm. like, okay, you could say this is where people are going to believe again for Ronald Acuna. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's very likely, but
probably in the off season,
To give a little pop to those who have hung in for an hour 20 on this show, can you guys give me some forgiveness on a wild card one here? No.
This is your pick, man. This is
I know, but it's breaking the rule that
I know
think
where
you're going.
I know where you're
15.
Going here, and please do it. Please do
okay.
it.
Okay, I got Mason Miller going at 15.
Okay, I did not know where you're going.
Last year, Mason Miller went 27th in ADP overall. So this is a 12 spot jump. But if you have missed the ratios of Mason Miller this year. Last year, he was a 2.63 ERA and a 0.91 whip. This year, it is a 0.76 ERA with a 0.80 whip. He's already eclipsed the save total last year, and, you know, that should only go up. And I feel like we're just looking at, I mean, Cade Smith has been great in his own right, but when you look at, like, auction calculators or, you know, the player rater, there's an $8 jump from Mason Miller to Cade Smith from the relief standpoint. Now, granted, it's not as much value as like a Christopher Sanchez, a Schlittler, but in comparison, looking at like scarcity, again, I probably don't actually think I would bet that Mason Miller will go 15th, but I think we're going to see some crazy helium, especially in the NFBC leagues where people kind of get crafty and try to construct their team in unique ways, that his min pick will definitely be lower than 15, because I think people are going to be like, you know, pulling out some crazy strategies. So I just think it's a huge hat tip to like one of the most dominant relief seasons we've seen, other than the fact that volume, you'd love to see him like get more opportunities, have more than 50 innings pitched, but for a guy that went 27th last year, he's only built on like this growing lore of just how dominant he is. So wanted to throw that out, but open to your guys' thoughts on it. And then Steve, I want to hear who you thought I was going to hit on there.
I thought you were going Jordan Walker.
Yeah, he was on the short list. So was like Matt Olson, Acuna. Even another wild card, which is too soon for that, but Hunter Goodman. I mean, talk about Ben Rice losing the C. Like Goodman is now a couple years with the Coors factor. But yeah, well, I mean, I know, Steve, you would never touch a reliever this early.
Well, I mean, in NFBC, he's going to go here or earlier. You know, if he's still on, you know, who knows if he's on the Padres, maybe he'll get traded to like a, you know, the Yankees or something in the off season. Like, and you know, there's always rumblings of, hey, are they going to stretch him out at this point? I don't know if that's ever going to happen. That's maybe a pipe dream, but you never know. But like in NFBC formats where saves are priced up, you know, 20-30%, like he is going to go here. But I mean, the argument you made is strong. Like there's never been a better case for someone that contributes as much as Miller does from this slot and from being a reliever. So, you know, it's a really fun and interesting pick, and just the results have been otherworldly.
Dan, any thoughts? I mean, the other thing that plays into it is how you set it up, Dan, that it gets to the spot where you're like, you could pick a handful of guys. So that makes it even more inviting to just do something crazy. But thoughts on Miller? Do you ever go closer early, Dan?
I don't. And I did Miller in me and Stav's home league just slipped so far that I was like, I just got to take this guy. And I didn't even think that he was going to be what he is. And I actually took him in another league. And both those teams I've done really well in. So I feel like I have to be invested in him again. Listen, he's an amazing player. And it's funny because I looked at this tier and you're getting like, I was staring at Acuna and there's like, it's like that funny tier of guys where they all kind of have the warts of like the Corbin Carroll, Ronald Acuna, like Fernando Tatis was like in this group last year, Kyle Tucker, Jose Ramirez. Yeah. Like, it's like, whose warts do you think will not exist next year? And you're going to be, someone's going to be right and someone's going to be wrong. So you're getting to that point in the draft where if Miller is going to be just like a safe home run, 40 saves and ratios that are incredible, then like, I understand picking him over some of these guys where it's kind of a minefield.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when you list out all those names, it's like, there's going to be, it's like spin the wheel on who the pick is and everything. But I think for those leagues where like, it's so frustrating to chase saves and everything, like you could do a lot worse than a guy that's going to, I mean, talk about head to head, Dan, in those weeks, I'm sure you've had the same experience as me that like this guy, you'll have like four rough outings from your pitchers. You're like, how's my ERA like a 3-4? And you're like, oh, because Mason Miller's got four innings
in this week.
Okay, so fellas, we made it through. We're running at an hour 20, so I think what we're gonna do here is we'll each do kind of a hit list of our wrap-up topics of surprise, any of these. You can pick from surprise, best value, best spot that you like, but we'll go one at a time, and maybe Steve will have you set it off with just kind of a garden variety of whatever your big takeaways are. For the listeners, we'll recap going 1 through 15: Otani, Judge, PCA, Bobby Witt Jr., James Wood, Yordan Alvarez, Junior Caminero, Juan Soto, Jacob Mizorowski, Ellie De La Cruz, Nick Kurtz, Ben Rice, CJ Abrams, Tarek Skubal, Mason Miller.
So I'm going to go even more off topic than that list that you gave there that I put on the rundown. So good job, me. How many? There are 9 players that went in the first round in March last year at NFBC that we did not take.
That's wild.
Crazy. And maybe there's too much recency bias, but Acuna, I maybe would have considered him with, you know, the 12th or 13th pick that I had.
Yeah.
Jose Ramirez, Paul Skeens, Julio Rodriguez, Garrett Crochet, Kyle Tucker, Gunnar Henderson, Corbin Carroll, Fernando Tatis. Now, to be fair, those were picks 9 to 15, and Jose Ramirez was pick 7. Acuna was 5. So, you know, it's not like we skipped, you know, Acuna. It's been just injury riddled year, and you know, you kind of can write it off. But honestly, at this point, with how many injuries he's had, I don't know how much you can expect of a bounce back. Honestly, at this point, and the others, it's like there just hasn't been the production from any of those guys. Including Paul Skeens. You know, I think that Paul Skeens will still be a great second round pick, and the basically everything under the hood is kind of just driven by BABIP and some bad ball luck and maybe slightly lower K rate than normal. But everyone else just hasn't produced enough to be considered here. It's just been really pretty much a minefield. Like, you know, some of these guys have had decent seasons. You know, even Fernando Tatis has salvaged his season with average and steals and, you know, hitting 8 homers in the last 60 days, which is seemingly good for him now at this point. But Julio Rodriguez has not had a good year. Jose Ramirez has had a down year, has been injured. Kyle Tucker has been absolutely mid. Gunnar Henderson, you know, has seemingly gotten worse since that, you know, amazing 38 season year over year. Garrett Crochet is injured, and who knows if he's pitching again this year. Like, there's not much of a compelling argument to make for any of those guys over these guys, despite the turnover in the first round, which, you know, will probably be the most in any recent year, as we sort of prove through this exercise.
Yeah, it is wild to hear you list those off, because and you want to question it, and then you look at each one, and like you said, Dan, it's like the warts are there, and you even Acuna, where you're like, surely he's going top 15, this is kind of silly, and then you're like, it's been since that crazy 2023 that he's put up even a second round level season. So Dan, want to hear whether you want to go from the rundown or just general thoughts, but surprises, value, players you had a hard time leaving out, like where would you take it?
I think there is, you know, I'm not going to say it's recency bias, but we're obviously doing this in the middle of the season, so you got to give it a little bit of time with the offseason and you get the hype kind of going again. But again, are you sure that you're going to pick the guy between that group of like Jose Ramirez, Corbin Carroll, Ronald Acuna? How confident are you that you're going to pick that guy that's not going to have that follow-up year that's just mid, and then you're just like, why did I even do that and not take a Nick Kurtz or Ben Rice or, you know, a Mizorowski? And you're like, why did I do that? And you know what I'm going to say too is that the Kyle Tucker and Acuna, these guys have burned multiple people, that to the point where it's like, you know, like you get one down year and everyone, like I'm the guy who's always like, I'm buying the next year. It's the down year. But now you're getting guys who are, it's like Kyle Tucker, like that's like three owners who are just like, God, this guy. Like, and then it the stink gets like enough where you're going to see a little bit of a slide because people are like, what's the upside? Like, what, like really? Like this isn't worth it compared to, I can take, you know, Jacob Mizorowski or Ellie De La Cruz and kind of at the end of that first round instead of taking like one of those guys. So I'm always like about mitigating risk and kind of hoping you can catch the upside. And to me, those guys, you're kind of just hoping they can get back to being normal, and it's kind of unsexy. And I think you got to swing big. And so I think our grouping is kind of how you maybe swing big and how you kind of maybe scalp a lot of value out of like certain draft spots.
Yeah. I think when I look at it, you know, it would be interesting to just have like a simulator button and roll the second round to try to figure out what KDS would look like. But my hunch tells me where we stopped is where a massive SP run would start. Like whether it's Christopher Sanchez, Schlittler, Yamamoto. Like Yamamoto. Some of those names. Yeah. Yamamoto, all of that. So it's hard to make sense of, like, I think the way we did this, I'd feel pretty good about like Ellie at pick 10 and then having fourth pick of the second round. Like that would be interesting. Looking back, I can definitely tell you Bobby Witt at 4 is my least favorite pick on the board. And it was the one I made. And I was sweating it when both of that turn because of the Judge Otani. But like you said, on the pick Ellie, not Bobby. And then I guess I would just add that I do feel like after pick 10, where we had the, it was the swing of Mizorowski, Ellie De La Cruz. To me, that is a notable drop in tier just collectively. Mm-hmm. No knock on any individual pick, but Kurtz, Rice, Abrams, I mean, Skubal, yeah, to get an SP2 that has been, you know, an out-and-out SP1 confidence is good there, but it definitely feels like those other previous 10 guys are like you're leaving with what you feel is like, yeah, a true tier one fantasy all-star. The other ones are like you're justifying that first round pick, kind of like when you used to get Freddie, yeah, Freeman at pick 10 or something, and you're like, eh, he's my first pick. So yeah, this was fun though, guys. And Dan, great having you on. Hell, maybe we'll do a second round and have Dan on in a few weeks. But yeah, it was a blast. So I know we ran super long. You guys are East Coast, so we will wrap there. But thank you again, Dan, for jumping on the show. I loved it, Steve. So great call and fun rundown. Any closing thoughts from you gentlemen before we sign off here?
No, this was super fun. I'm glad, like,
you're like brushing. It was fun
doing
there,
this,
like,
as
no,
you know,
gotta get to bed.
Well, yeah, that. But also, it was just fun doing this as a three person sort of team thing. And really interesting. I agree, Van. I think it is kind of like it's a big tier, but the first 10, and then it kind of opens up. You know, maybe you can include Kurtz in that, just considering how good he was before that injury, but. You know, and then within that there are many tiers, but I think that's a pretty good observation and takeaway for sure.
Yeah. I will say though, this is a fun exercise because you can like bank this, and then when you go back in December and the first round is completely different, and it's just because of the way that people are talking,
yes,
about guys.
That's so true.
And you're like, wait a second, we did this in, yeah, mid-August when we had no bias, uh-huh, whatsoever. We're just kind of in the season.
We don't have ADP to compare it to, or everyone else's picks. And Van and I have
and
talked
so like
about that.
Revisiting this is going to be like a nice, yeah, way to be like, wait a minute. In that, yeah, moment, I felt, yeah, like this is how, yeah, it went. And then everyone starts talking up like Corbin, yeah, Carroll and these other, yeah, guys. And you're like, no. Like, this is how, yeah, I saw it. It's a good way to kind of take like, yeah, a snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. With where you thought people were supposed
Van
to
be. And I talk about that all the time. It's like, just listen to what you were thinking in the season and what you were seeing it. Like, you know,
I know you wish you could,
yeah,
take notes.
Yeah. Well, we
like,
did, we have this draft, you know, board.
Share it out.
So,
share it,
yeah,
out.
Yeah. I'll share it.
It's so true. And it's true that there is an element of yeah, recency bias. When we did it last year, it was like Schwarber, Cal Raleigh. And it's like, yeah. So Steve usually checks me on those. So, yeah. But yeah, great show. Thanks again, Dan. And thanks for everybody for tuning in on a long, fun one. You know, give us your feedback, give us your hot takes. And then
who'd we miss?
Yeah. We'll have to definitely look back on this, Steve, as one, when we do our too early mock draft in, yeah, the off season. But, that wraps us up for episode 223, first round draft for 2027. Thank you guys, as always, for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later. Nice. That's a wrap.